You're listening to the audio program Host and Guest, hosted by me, Rick Katchke. Now here's myself, Rick Katchke. Yes, welcome to this edition of Host and Guest. I'm your host, Rick Katchke, and on today's show, I am joined by comedian, writer, and musician Nate Fernald. I've known Nate for over 15 years, and during that time, it has been a thrill for me to watch all that he's done over that past decade and a half, including two Team Submarine albums, performing on stage with Bob Odenkirk and David Cross, having his own Comedy Central half hour, writing for the Pete Holmes Show, and then the Late Late Show with James Corden, acting in a yogurt commercial with Cam Newton, and most recently performing with the band Krub, who just put out their second EP, Welcome to My Life. I caught up with Nate to talk about all the things I just mentioned, with the exception of the yogurt commercial. But before we get to the interview, here's a little taste of Mountain Dew Gives Me Powers from the new Krub EP, Welcome to My Life. All right, well, welcome back to the show for the first time in over a decade, Nate Fernald. Nate, thank you so much for being on Host and Guest again.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
So there's a lot I want to dive into between comedy and music now with Krub, but to lead off, do you recall how we first met, our first interaction?
Oh, at a concert. Was it Amy Mann?
It was,
yes,
yeah.
That's right, Amy Mann concert. That's right. Yeah, you were, is that the, oh, was it the Vic Theater?
It was the Vic, yeah.
Yeah, I remember now.
It was total happenstance. You guys had been part of a Sound of Young America Chicago show, and I thought you guys, you and Steve, were great. And then, like a month and a half later, came down through, like, sleet and snow to see Amy Mann's holiday show at the Vic. And you end up being seated next to me. So,
yeah,
that was total happenstance. That's how we first met.
Oh, wow. That's right. And that's how we met. And then the podcast came later.
Yes. That interaction was like one of the things where I was like, well, if I can hang with Nate from Team Submarine, maybe I could do a podcast.
Wow. Wait, so was that, was meeting me at the Amy Mann show technically the first ever interview for...
We'll say it is, yeah. In December of 2007 at the Vic, me just talking to you throughout the entire concert.
Also there was Steve Waltine and Katie Rich, both Second City performers, and then Steve Waltine works on Colbert now, and Katie was at SNL for a while, and so there's a whole slew of writer comedians there.
And then the first time that I interviewed Team Submarine, Paul Britton interrupted midway
That's
through
right.
the interview.
So that's right.
Something about you just draws in these performers, Nate.
Yeah, everyone wants a piece of Nate Fernald.
So I guess just kind of to go back in time, I'm kind of curious, how did you first get started in comedy? I mean, I caught you in your early 20s with Team Submarine, but like, what was kind of the start prior to that?
I was always a goof off, and I'd say that my first like comedy performance was like I gave a speech at my high school graduation, and it was I wrote a funny speech at the time. I hope it never ever surfaces because I the bits I remember about it now, I would, let's just say I've grown a lot since then, but But at the time, for an 18-year-old boy, you know, pretty successful performance. And then that kind of, I remember like the feeling after it, like just like a huge buzz of just, you know, an audience clapping and laughing for you. And that's, And that's when I was turned into a psychopath who then had to pursue that for the rest of my life. So, I started doing like improv and sketch when I got to college. And then I moved to Chicago to do more of that. And that's where I met my friend Steve, who we started Team Submarine. And then we did that for like probably about 10 years. And then we moved to New York together. And then and now I'm fortunate enough to make a living off of it. So
yeah,
that's the condensed version.
In terms of like influences, did you have like anyone in specific, whether it was that speech or with Team Submarine?
So influences, I watched SNL like religiously as a kid, so that was huge for me. And then when I got to college, I discovered Mr. Show, and that was like the most transformative piece of comedy I think I'd seen. And then Conan, of course, is the other one. I stayed up every night. I would tape Conan every night, and I would essentially pause out all the interviews and the commercials. So I like just had like a library of VHS tapes of just like Conan bits. And Conan was very revolutionary for my comedy instincts. And then Adam Sandler's early stand-up albums were also a huge, huge part of my upbringing. So that was like, so I never had cable TV. So I missed out on a lot of the kind of more like, you know, left of the dial comedy stuff, like, you know, Kids in the Hall or Upright Citizens Brigade and a lot of stand-up even. So yeah, it was mostly just like SNL, Conan, Adam Sandler was what I was obsessively watching.
You mentioned Mr. Show, which also was like hugely transformative for me when I saw it. And I think back to when Team Submarine got to be in like the Bob and David show in Chicago. What was that like working with them and being part of that?
That was one of the most like surreal moments of my life. It was the first time I ever felt nervous on stage doing that. So we had just moved to New York shortly before they did a Just for Laughs festival in Chicago. We had just moved to New York, and then we got invited to go back to do some shows at the Chicago Just for Laughs festival. And Bob and David were doing, I think, like their first, you know, show together post Mr. Show. It was a very big deal at the Lakeshore Theater. And then they had just a few. It wasn't like opening acts. It was like little intermissions. Like they had this little stand at the side of the stage. And then while they were prepping for the next sketch, like a comedian would come out and perform a little bit. So I remember John Mulaney was one of them. And I can't remember who else was there. And then me and Steve got to be one of them. And I remember like coming out on that stage, and like I'd never really had stage fright before. And I just was like very deer in headlights in that moment. And I remember there was a review of that show in like the Chicago Reader or something the next day, and they had said like, you know, Team Submarine seemed very nervous at the show or something. And I was like, oh no. But I remember after that, I like never felt nervous on stage again, because I was just like, well, I did that. I just like performed it really in front of Bob and David. And that was like nothing else can really freak me out again after that. And it was, so that was probably the most nervous I've ever been on stage. Like that was the peak. And then I never got back to that again, which is a good thing.
Yeah. I guess I haven't shared this, but I did a sketch writing class through IO with Kim Howard Johnson. It was for like SNL packet writing, and you had to write a monologue as if somebody was a host. And I wrote it as if like Bob Odenkirk was hosting Saturday Night Live. And Kim sent it to Odenkirk. He sent like me performing this monologue. So like Odenkirk joined the class the next week to like give, like, he's like, oh, I liked it, and here's what I would do. He like gave notes on it. So wow. Kind of in line with that, I'm like, well, I can't really be embarrassed anymore because somebody who I admire so much thought it was decent. So what do I have to lose now, right?
That's amazing. I guess this is like a rite of passage food. You perform in front of Bob Odenkirk and then you're ready for anything after that.
So then now the past decade, roughly, you've been in Los Angeles?
About, yeah. Just over 7 years in Los Angeles.
And so you had, I remember you wrote on the Pete Holmes show.
Yep.
And you had your own Comedy Central half hour. And then how many years were you writing for James Corden?
I was at Corden for over 7 years. I think just probably like 7.5 years about. And then that just ended 4 months ago about.
Yeah.
And then a strike happened 3 days later. So.
And thankfully it's concluded, so I can talk to you about it now.
Yeah.
Do you have any favorite moments or sketches that you wrote on the show?
I do. I have lots. I think my most favorite thing was I did a sketch with the Price is Right game cliffhangers. Are you familiar with the game?
Yeah.
So I did a sketch where we actually got to use the actual, because their studio was just right downstairs from us. And so cliffhangers is a game, and I'm spoiling the sketch, so there's no point in watching it now, but it's a game where there's a little man who's like a little cardboard man who's going up a cliff, like a mountain, and you have to guess the prices of items, and for every dollar over you guess, he goes up the mountain a little bit more, and then if you guess too high, he walks over the cliff at the end and dies, and then you lose the game. So that's probably one of the more like iconic games from that show. So I got to do a sketch where they brought up the actual game from that, and there's someone playing it, and you know, it was set up like, you know, James was like, the Price is Right is downstairs and they let us borrow one of the games. So it just seemed like we were just having an audience member play a Price is Right game. The audience member, of course, a plant, my friend Zach Broussard. And then he guesses wrong. And then when the little cardboard guy goes over the cliff and dies, a little cardboard family then sort of walks up the cliff, and this kid is trying to find his dad. And then, you know, a cardboard police officer shows up and tells him that his dad just fell off the cliff and died. And it's like little cardboard ambulances and helicopters coming. And it's a 12 minute buildup to a very quick punchline, because it's like they essentially just play the game straight for a full 12 minutes. And I was very glad they let me do that, because it's like, you know, to have a sketch that is 12 minutes of just nothing really to then get to one singular punchline. But it was, it went great. And that was, I think probably my favorite thing I've done on that show.
You know, I think 12 minutes is a little too short. It should have been the whole episode.
That would, I mean, look, I fought for that.
The cool thing was too, you were on camera a lot, both on the show, and you did behind the scenes YouTube social media stuff for them too.
It was nice. It was, again, just like having grown up watching Conan, it's like, you see the writers in the sketches, and like, when you say you want to write for a late night show, that's like part of what you're saying you're, at least for me and, you know, some others, like when I say wanted to work in late night, like I didn't just want to write for late night. I wanted to like shoehorn myself into sketches on late night as well. And I got to do that a little bit at the Pete Holmes show. And then when I first got to the Pete Holmes show, we would write these sketches, and then some of the writers would just kind of assume that we would be in them, but then they would go and cast like real actors, you know, like who were great and way better than, you know, the writers would have been. And then I was just like, what the hell, man? Like, I want to be in these. So I pitched a bit on the Pete Holmes show that I did a couple times called Nice Boy Telling Nice Jokes. And that pitch came out of me just like getting mad that I wasn't getting cast in sketches. So I was like, I need to write a sketch that like they physically cannot put anyone else except me into. And then, so I pitched that, and they're like, who should play that? And I'm like, they're like, well, I guess it should be Native, because he's got to kind of look like this. And it's like, and then when I got to Corden, I still got to do a lot of that. And that's always like, you know, writing jokes for 8 to 10 hours a day is really just turns your brain to mush, and getting, you know, every couple weeks getting a little reprieve where you actually get to go and just like, you know, put on a little costume and do some bits in front of the audience is always just like really just kind of rejuvenates you a little bit. And it's like, I don't even know if I could have done that job for that long if I hadn't been like getting to do on camera stuff like in between.
I had Rick DeMint of Portroids on a month ago or two, and we were talking about like the funniest things we've ever seen in person. And I, to this day, I think the Sketchfest show that Team Submarine did, where it bookended, where you started with "I want candy" and you threw candy out into the audience, and then just escalated it. And then the closing bit where everybody got on stage and it was just you two in the audience. I truly think like those are like the funniest things I've ever seen in person. Do you have things that you think are like, boy, that's the best bit I've ever written, or anything along those lines?
I mean, that "I want candy" thing is, I still talk about that bit a lot, like to people, because that is probably one of my favorite things that I have ever done. And I don't even remember the ending of that show that you're talking about.
Okay, so, you know, "I Want Candy," for anybody that hasn't listened to the Rick DeMint episode, you know, you guys came out and "I Want Candy," and it was like at like full volume.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
"I Want Candy" is blasting and you're handing out, started off like fun size candy bars. Then it was like full size candy bars. And then it just started becoming like different stuff. Like,
yeah, whatever. So first then we like come out with like grocery bags and just take out like boxes of cereal and loaves of bread and bananas and potatoes and just handing food out to everyone. And then basically the items getting a little bit bigger, and then we're handing out like VCRs and DVD players to the audience, and then like bicycles and televisions. And then I don't remember if we did this at the Sketchfest show, but a lot of times we did that bit, we then crowd surfed a full dining room table into the audience.
Yes, because CJ Toledano and I were in the back row, and the table came up to us. So like CJ and I were in the back holding this huge table.
And so, I mean, the audience gets incredibly amped at that bit. Like just the progression from, you know, Jolly Rancher to full-size dining room table. And then, you know, then that's the last thing. And then the music kind of dies out. And then we introduce ourselves. We go, "Hey guys, we're Team Submarine, and we're actually going to need all that stuff back." And the song comes back on, and we go and we collect everything back from the audience. And then we stay on stage and take an inventory of everything. And we like realize there's a banana missing. And we, you know, start really approaching the audience and like, you know, being like, "Who's got the banana?" Like we handed out 4 bananas. We only got 3 back, but we handed out 6 potatoes and got 7 back. So thank you to whoever did that. And that, yeah, we did that. We did a bit as often. It was an expensive bit to do. We did that as often as we could, and we loved doing it. And it was actually at that Just for Laughs festival in Chicago where we opened up for Bob and David. Bob also hosted like a sketch night at IO.
Yeah. Yep.
And then we did that bit at that show. And then I remember after that bit, like Bob ran backstage and was just like, that was so funny. That was incredible. Like, and it was, and that made up for the night before.
So to describe your bit back for the closing bit,
I don't even remember.
So you guys were like, "You guys have been such a great audience. We just want to capture this night. So we want to get a photo with you guys." And you brought up a disposable camera. Does this ring a bell at all or no?
I'm getting little flashes of it.
So then you're like, "All right, actually it would look cooler if we just had like ladies in the audience. So fellas, if you could all get out of your chairs and get on stage, and you know, that way it's just us." And then you just kept narrowing it down. You're like, and actually we prefer just brunettes. So anybody who's not a brunette, please get on stage. And then you basically kept putting in all these qualifiers so that literally the entire audience was on stage and it was just you and Steve. in like the audience seats.
Okay.
And then you're like, all right, so if you, and then you gave the camera, it was a disposal camera, you gave it to an audience member to take the picture. You're like, all right, so if you could just snap that photo. And it was at the very end of the disposal camera, so it's just, she's not able to take the picture, it's just winding.
Oh man, I forgot about that. That's very funny. That's a good bit.
So yeah, the bookend of like getting everybody involved at the very top and then ending it with this very memorable bit to you. I like those two bits were so funny.
I remember bits and pieces of that show, and that I think that was like me and Steve's favorite show that we ever did. And we were talking about it on the phone like fairly recently, like within the last 6 months and we were talking about that show and being like, do we have that on video? Because we have all of our Sketchfest shows on video except that one. And I like emailed the people who used to run Sketchfest, and I was like, is there like an archive of shows? And there's like no clue, like that was so long ago. So I think that show was lost to the ether. But I just remember bits and pieces of that show, and I remember specifically that being our favorite show that we ever did. And we never did that specific show again. Like, was that the one where we kind of like sort of like told the story of Team Submarine throughout, and like how we I remember there's one other bit I remember from it that, again, and that show is the only time we did this bit, I think, where, so at the top of the show, we play a game, and the game has some sort of call and response thing with the audience. And then later in the show, we're like, we're doing flashbacks, and then we do a flashback to our first ever show, like many years ago, where we debuted that game. So we're in this flashback, we're debuting the game, and then we get to the call and response part, and then the audience does the response, and they were like, how do you guys know that? We've never even done this before. What's happening? And I really love that bit, and that, and again, that was, I think, the only time that ever got performed was that.
Yeah, there's one other thing that I recall, like, now that you say that, there was a part where you're like, you guys wanted to have like a video to show the audience, so you like hyped up this big video, and then like it goes to play and it's just a blue screen, and it's like saying like disk error and it's not working, and so you're just like berating the tech person.
We did a lot of bits about tech not working, because that was a thing. Every single sketch show we ever saw, there was always a tech problem with video. Like, cause this was like early days of video, just like,
right,
tech never ever worked. When anyone was playing a video, it just never ever ever worked properly. So then so we wanted to do video stuff, but we're just like, I don't know, it always just like brings every show to a halt. So then we started just, we just did bits that were about videos not working. And there's, I think on our second album, Glass Matthew, I believe there is a, we have one of the bits about a video not working on that album, I think.
I was there that night at the Beat Kitchen for the recording of that
album.
Oh,
nice.
And Correctamundo, I am going to start to transition to Crub, but Correctamundo, okay, it has one of my favorite, it's one of those bits, and I don't mean this like insulting, but like I feel like I reference it and I expect people to like know it, but it's like, oh wait, it's not known by millions of Americans. Mm-hmm. Where the jingles.
Oh yeah.
You pizza. Come up with a jingle for a pizza place. God, that whole bit is so funny to me.
That album is not really in wide circulation anymore. You can get, so that, again, that was recorded well over a decade ago. That was recorded like,
I think 2008. I think it's, yeah. I think
yes, yes. Yeah. 2008. Yeah. So there's a handful of things that just didn't age great, as you know, can often happen with comedy. And so we took that album off streaming services. It's still on Bandcamp with like just a couple of tracks removed, and that one is on there, that track. And but I've been thinking of like, just putting that one. So I've been wanting to put the condensed version of the album back onto streaming services, but like you got to pay $5, no, $10 to do it. And that's I think roughly 6 billion streams. So it's like, we're, you know, we still haven't paid off those albums. So the idea of like putting another $9.99 into it is just like, can't do that. But
the sunk cost fallacy.
But I was thinking of like putting that jingles bit on like YouTube or something, because people do like bring that up to me every now and then, and that is in probably of all the bits I've done throughout my life, that's probably in the top five for sure. So you know what, you've inspired me. It's going on YouTube.
You know, I actually think there is a recording from that night. I think like the video of it is on the Team Submarine page, because it was at the Annoyance, right?
Yes. Okay, great. It's already there. saves me some effort.
So now you have the band Krub.
Yep.
Tell me about how this band came to be in the start of it. You just put out your second EP, Welcome to My Life, last month.
Yeah. I've been a musician for a long time, and I've always loved playing music. But so when you, at least this happens for me and a lot of people in my circle, is when you start pursuing comedy, you go a little psycho and you're like, I can't do anything except comedy. Like, I can't go on a vacation. I can't have a hobby. Like, I can only dedicate my time to like writing and performing comedy, and that's it. So so just like I stopped playing music for a very long time, and I mean pretty much since I graduated college, I just like never played any music, because I'm just like, I'm doing comedy now. Like there's no time for hobbies. Like it's so. And then I used to always just like say to myself, like, someday if I can ever make a living doing comedy, then, you know, because before I'd have like day job and then doing comedy stuff at night, and I'm like, if comedy can become my day job, then I need to make music at night. And then it was a few years into the Late Late Show where I was finally like, oh, whoa, wait, this is happening now. Like, comedy is my job in the day, so I can have a hobby now. And then one of my coworkers was kind of in a similar situation. So I said to him, I was like, hey, do you want to play guitars after work? A little bit of a precursor. Me and another friend started a Weezer cover band, and we played one show, and I'd never played music live before. And it was such a like huge thrill. Like, I think I even liked it better than doing comedy live. And then she moved to New York, and then my Weezer cover band didn't exist anymore. So I asked my coworker if he wanted to play guitars after work, and he was like, yeah, definitely. And then another coworker overheard us, and she was like, hey, my husband is a drummer and he doesn't have anyone to play with. Can he join you guys? And I was like, total stranger, sure, why not? And then he brought a friend of his who played bass, and then everyone just like personality wise just clicked instantly. And then like, because I don't even think we thought of becoming a band or, you know, making our own songs. We were just gonna just jam and maybe learn a couple covers, and then everyone just like clicked so well, it just kind of very naturally turned into like original songs. And then we recorded some of them, and they exist to listen to.
Yeah, and the new EP, obviously the lead single, I'm gonna call it the lead single, Mountain Dew Gives Me Powers, and then Book Mommy, those are my favorite two from it. Do you have a favorite track that you guys have done so far, whether it's this EP or the previous one?
It changes every day. We were just talking about yesterday how the song Wet Freaks on the new EP was none of our favorite songs, and now it's all of our favorite song. And it's I don't know, cycles through. Got a different favorite Krub song every week. That's how good Krub is you can't decide on a favorite song.
And there's 7 songs out right now. So, you know, you get one for each day, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, you know, this day it's going to be Wet Freak. Tomorrow it's going to be, you know, Horse Video. Yeah.
Yep. It's, yeah, get into it. It's, yeah, we're proud of our new EP. We think we did a good job.
In terms of, like, musical influences, I know you mentioned Weezer. Anybody else that you cite as a big influence?
I think the Pixies are probably, like, my biggest influence of all. Like, I'm a big Weezer fan, but the Rivers Cuomo is actually an incredibly talented singer, and he's also like a crazy good guitarist as well. And these, like, a lot of the seemingly simple pop songs that band has are actually, like, they can sometimes have kind of complicated chords, and they're not all of them, but sometimes I'll try to learn one and I'm like, oh, this is surprisingly hard. And I can't sing at all. But the Pixies kind of influenced me in the way that, like, oh, if you can't really sing, it's fine if you can just sort of figure out a fun way to yell.
So what's the makeup of the band? Who's each individual member?
So they're, one is another comedy writer. And then the other two are both therapists. And I can't remember, because none of our full names are on, like, our website or anything. I can't remember because, like, they're dealing with, like, clients and stuff, if they want, like, a low profile on the internet. So let's say a couple of my friends.
So for anybody who is seeing a therapist right now, just ask them outright, are you in Krub?
Yeah, you could be, you know, getting your dome dissected by a member of Krub.
So now that the second EP is out for you guys, what is next for the band?
Third EP. We're trying to book a show. We've only done one live show, which was super fun. But we're not like, you know, the band is very much just for fun. Like, none of us are trying to be full-time musicians by any means at all. And so it's looking like we're going to do about one EP and one show a year. And that's, I think that's pretty good for us. So we're trying to book a sort of belated record release show for a new EP. And then we have a few new songs we're working on, and then we'll probably try to record those ones in a few months and put out another EP.
I will say, with Mountain Dew Gives Me Powers, it actually kind of taps into something that I feel is a lost market. You know, there's lots of songs about drinking and beer. I feel like there should be, like, a Jimmy Buffett who just does songs about different sodas. So, like, he's got a song about Pepsi and A&W root beer. And so I'm just saying, Nate, just a floating an idea that this could be...
Damn.
The market that you corner.
That's incredible. Fun backstory for Mountain Dew Gives Me Powers. Did you ever see the show World News Tonight?
Yeah.
Improv Olympic. So Arnie Niekamp, who's a performer on that show and also hosts a podcast called The Magic Tavern, which is very, very funny. He, years ago when I was interning at IO, probably like 2006, I don't remember anything else in the scene. All I remember is he was in some scene and he, like, his character drank a Mountain Dew and he just went, "Whoa, this Mountain Dew gives me powers." And I thought it was the funniest thing I ever heard. And I've said that phrase just a million times. And then when I was working on the song, I actually emailed him and I was like, "Hey, I work on a song for my band. Do you mind if I use this phrase that you said in an improv show 15 years ago?" And he was like, "Yeah, go ahead." So
you didn't have to pay like $9.99 to get the royalties.
You know, I told him that if the song ever becomes a massive global hit, I will absolutely send a big fat check to him. Currently, I'd say we've made about 12 cents off of it, which I am more than happy to share with him if you'd like. But
I love the very quick, "I don't care what my talking dog says," like a Son of Sam type deal where a dog is telling him the Mountain Dew doesn't give you powers. Yeah. That is what I love. in that song.
Yeah, it's I have a friend who works in marketing, and I got a text from him, and he was like, "Hey, we're pitching stuff to Mountain Dew today. Do you care if I pitch your song to them?" I was like, "Please." And there's, you know, I think the Mountain Dew corporate would love the chorus of the song, but you know, the rest of the song is essentially admitting that it's destroying your mind and your body. So might not actually get play in a Mountain Dew commercial.
But the feel of it takes me back to being like in a basement in middle school playing GoldenEye. That just that fondness. Yeah. So regardless of the lyrics, that's what the feel of the song.
Good.
Is.
I'm glad we could bring you back there.
Something had to. Nate, anything else going on that you wanted to share? Anything new in your life?
Anything new in my life? Not really. There's been a strike going on for the last 4 months, which has finally ended. So hopefully I can start trying to figure out something new in my life. I'd say at this moment, Krub is probably the thing I'm most excited about. My little band with our little songs. And I will hopefully have some new comedy projects here or there. And then and Team Submarine, we still talk about album 3, which we don't know when or where it will happen, but it's still being talked about.
Well, that, I am thrilled to hear that. You're keeping hope alive for me.
We did have an idea that because like it seems like podcasts are more popular than like stand-up comedians hosting podcasts. It seems to be more popular than stand-up comedians doing stand-up comedy now. And I've heard lots of people say, my favorite comedian is blank. I don't care for their stand-up, but I love their podcast, which is just the most bizarre thing to me. It's just like, I don't like this person's art that they worked hard on, but I love when they're just like, just chatting with someone. So we talked about our third album just being a podcast. So
I love
instead
it.
Instead of like writing a show and putting it up in front of an audience, we just record one 45-minute podcast and put it on an album. And that's because that's what comedy is now, is
not have anything going into it. You know, at like sleepovers when I was a kid, we would just take a tape deck and we would record like 90 minutes just off the top of the head, like the very early form of podcasting.
Oh yeah.
So I like the idea of like that being how you guys formulate your third album. Just get an old tape recorder and do it.
Yeah. So it'll in theory be something like that. And if you remember any other Team Submarine bits from that show, please share them with me, because it's my brain has been mostly wiped clean. So,
well, I'll get in touch with CJ too to see if he recalls, so we can like can remount the show through our memories.
I mean, that would be, oh man, a community effort where, like, did you see that movie where suddenly like the Beatles don't exist? And then like,
yeah, yesterday, right?
Yeah. And then this guy's trying to piece together Beatles songs from his memory. Like, we should do that, but with that Team Submarine show, just like find people who are in the audience and just like, we can get just like a little bit from each person. We can put the whole show together and then remount it. So for those,
so look at this, we've come up with something new to work on.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's get a documentary crew in.
Thank you so much for being again on Host and Guest.
Thanks for having me back. I think this might be my first ever repeat podcast appearance, so this is a huge moment for me.
big day.
Yeah, and thanks for having me, Rick. Great seeing you again, and glad we've stayed in touch after all these years since that Amy Mann show.
What a pleasure to catch up with Nate. Be sure to check out Krub on Bandcamp, and while you're there, check out Team Submarine as well. And if you or a loved one were in the audience at the Chicago Sketchfest show discussed in today's episode, and you recall any bits from the show that we did not mention, send your recollections to me at rick.katchke@gmail.com, and I will make sure that Nate sees them. Thank you again to Nate for returning to the show, and thank you to you for listening to this edition of Host and Guest.